Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to the show today. Head over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can learn more about our family of design enthusiasts, add your name to our email list, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. You'll be part of all the great things that we have going on. And the really great thing that's happening right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. As an art advisor, she helps new and seasoned collectors with the acquisition and sale of contemporary art. She relies on knowledge, expertise, and relationships built during her 15 years in the New York world of art to find desirable pieces with sustained value for her clients' homes and offices. A Manhattan native, she's a graduate of Amherst College and received her PhD from the Bard Graduate Center. She's held positions at several galleries in addition to Sotheby's and a leading art advisory firm. All of this has kept her very busy making the world more beautiful. Amy Snyder, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Thanks so much for having me on, James. I've really been looking forward to this.
Likewise. I love talking about art, and you seem to be the right person to talk to about it.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. So take us back and tell us how your love for art first came about. When did you realize that was the direction for your life?
My father is a bit of an amateur artist, so I always went to a lot of museums growing up, particularly when I traveled with my parents. And I think when I was about 16, it kind of clicked for me that this was something I could do for a living. So I knew I wanted to work in the art world all through college, and I got my first job out of college at Sotheby's and have sort of taken it from there.
Wow. So downhill quickly from Sotheby's, right?
Depends how you look at it.
There you go. Well, so what is it about the world of art that you find so compelling?
I love beauty, and I love the idea that making things beautiful and interesting visually is something we do when we're done sort of starving and freezing to death. So I think the visual culture is incredibly important. And I think that your life can be really improved by living with beautiful and interesting works of art.
I couldn't agree more. You took the words right out of my mouth. So what was it like for you finishing up school and jumping into that first job? Was it everything that you expected it to be? Was it full of surprises? What was that experience like?
I would recommend anybody who wants to work in the fine art world to start at a big auction house. It's an incredible training ground. They have very high standards and really put up with nothing that isn't perfect. So I think I was a bit type A to start with, and it really trained me that everything I produced, every client interaction had to be at a very high level. In addition to that, I started in the catalog production department rather than a specialist department. So I had exposure to all the different fields, including antiques and carpets and contemporary art and, you know, antiquities, silver, everything you can think of. So it was a really neat way to learn about all the areas there were out there.
Did you find yourself gravitating towards one over the other? How did that process evolve for you?
I've always loved contemporary art. I love the idea that it's something living and you can actually meet and speak with the people who are making it. You learn so much doing studio visits with artists. And I wrote my dissertation on a living artist and working with him over the period of 5 years on a series of interviews made... Well, for one thing, made my dissertation research a lot more interesting than I think sitting just in a library and reading a bunch of books would have been. And for another thing, it captured this living record of somebody to, you know, create their legacy.
Wow. Can you tell us about that dissertation and who it was that you were chatting with?
It was about a sculptor named Ken Snelson, who actually just passed away about 6 months ago. And he's represented by Marlborough Gallery here in New York. And he makes large outdoor metal sculptures that I argue are associated with minimalism, which was one of the leading styles in the 1960s. He didn't necessarily feel that way, but that was that was where I came down in my dissertation.
Got it. All right. How did you meet him? How did that relationship begin?
He was a family friend, so I had known him growing up, and he was looking for somebody, as he was getting older, he was looking for somebody to help him out in his studio and begin to think about archiving things, and I heard through my mother about the opportunity, and it turned out that he was not ready for that. He was still a working artist. His studio was still, you know, a center of production, but as we started spending time together, and I did a little bit of research, I realized that there was nothing really scholarly written on his work. So I thought that there was sort of an opportunity and it'd be an exciting topic to spend some time with for a few years.
Wow. Sounds like it was.
It really was. It was an amazing process.
How exciting. So dissertation done. You've launched yourself into the world of art. What was it like when you took the next step and went out on your own?
So before I went out on my own, I worked for one of New York's leading art advisors for 5 years, which was an amazing experience. She did everything right in terms of transparency with her clients and was incredibly knowledgeable, both about art history and what was going on in art right now, but also the technical aspects of how to make things happen, how to get something up on a wall, despite various challenges. So I had this incredible professional training for 5 years while I was completing my degree. And then I left and worked for a gallery, and then I went out on my own with really a pretty full skill set for what I would need to do. I just needed the clients, which luckily I've gotten.
How nice. How nice for you. That does make a business work, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in my field who don't have the same skill set as me. When I go to an installation, I like to be able to look at the back of a picture and have an informed discussion with the art handler about how it's going to be installed. And I don't know that everybody has that technical know-how.
And to what do you credit that? Is that your education? Was that the time at Sotheby's? Was that a bit of all of the above?
All of the above. I've worked for mostly for small businesses where I wore a lot of different hats. Before grad school, I worked for a small gallery, and I worked again for a small gallery after leaving the art advisory practice. So you end up doing a little bit of everything. And while nobody should pay me to hang art on their wall, I can, in a pinch, wield a hammer, and I know how to do a lot of different things.
Very handy. Nice. Also, so what has the process been like getting your clients and getting projects up and running? And then tell us what you're working on right now. What's keeping you happy?
When I first started, I, you know, sent out a big email to everyone I knew and, you know, just said, I'm starting this business. I would be so grateful for referrals. And I was lucky enough to get a few. And I was also very lucky to work with an incredible interior designer on one of my first projects who has since brought me in on other projects. And I love working with interior designers on my work, on homes. I think that a client really gets the full package when they do. You know, I certainly know many more works of art to suggest than an interior designer does, but interior designers, because of their years of experience, have amazing ideas about how to present things visually, how to install them, that I don't think I would have on my own.
So it's a really wonderful collaboration when you get to do that.
Absolutely. And obviously I'm capable of working, you know, installing things without an interior designer, but I really think for that, you know, extremely polished home, you want both of us.
Yeah. The dynamic duo, right?
Exactly.
Nice.
So I've been lucky with referrals for the most part. And I'm part of a group of women who in various ways do services for luxury homes. And in that group, there's an interior designer and an architect and a garden designer, which has been a great source of referrals for me as well.
Wonderful. Do you do art then both in and out of the home?
I focus on mostly on residential projects, but I have done an occasional corporate commission. So maybe a very large painting especially made by the artist for a corporate lobby. And I would love to do more of that kind of thing. It's a really exciting process.
That must be, because you're then working with, I would assume, a board of some sort with the business making the decision, or are you working with just someone in-house who's curating the collection?
It varies. Often they'll have an in-house curator, or I'll be working with the architects of the space. Wow. And what's really neat about it is that I work very closely with the artist. So it'll be a series of studio visits, and really making sure that the people who've hired him or her are happy with what comes out at the end, without, you know, overstepping or insulting the artist, who can sometimes be sensitive.
Can't imagine that ever happening. you get to be a diplomat then.
Exactly.
Right? Nice.
There's a lot of being a diplomat in my work, also between married couples who are collecting together and may have very different tastes.
That sounds like there's some stories you could tell there.
Absolutely. I think there's a small part of being a marriage counselor in what I do. I think that you have to sort of choose, there's sort of two approaches. You can either choose the compromise approach, but what I really recommend is the one for me, one for you approach, and thinking about how the space is used. So I'm working on a townhouse on the Upper East Side right now, and the wife of the couple spends most of her time on the floor you enter into, which includes her office and the kitchen and the dining room. So she just was able to pick whatever she wanted for that space. On the parlor level, which is more formal, is where the husband has a desk and tends to entertain people. So for those larger purchases, he was calling the shots. And I think we found that rather than having to compromise, that was the way to go.
Nice, nice. One for each.
Exactly.
Keeps everybody happy.
Right.
So other than polishing your marriage counseling skills, when you think back over the years that you've been working in the art world, what is it about your work that you love the most, Amy?
I think I really love opening people's eyes to art and seeing them get excited about it. If I take someone to a gallery after I've been working with them about 6 months and they're really excited to tell me about the art, I feel like I've done a great job. Mm. I love when I hear from a client, as I just did last week, actually, that I've helped them buy something that they interact with on a daily basis. I work with a couple who collects 1960s fashion photography, and I helped them buy a few years ago a photograph of Twiggy by Barry Ladigan, and the wife of the couple just told me last week how she sort of sits there and has her morning coffee with it every morning. Mm. I was like, well, that's amazing. You know, that's a real, you know, very direct impact on how living with something beautiful and interesting with a story can improve your life.
Wow. Yeah. You want to hear more of those stories, don't you?
Absolutely.
Well, so if you take that same coin then, Amy, and you flip it over, sometimes there are challenges in the work that we do. What's the biggest challenge in working with your clients and bringing art into their homes these days?
I think the most challenging thing is usually the logistics. When I'm finishing an art season, as I am right now, I often have, you know, art shipping all over the world and getting framed, and there's a lot going on. And I really revel in those details. And I love challenging installations. As an art advisor, I think basically the most exciting thing you can do is a hoist, which is when a client has purchased a piece that is too large to go up in their elevator or stairwell, and you have to work with the city to close off the block and hire a crane, and you're just a little me sitting there directing this crane. You know, it's really, that's really a thrill for me. I feel like that's kind of the height of being a logistics master.
Wow. Yeah, that would be a bit challenging, but also quite thrilling once it's all in place, right?
Yeah. And it's definitely, it's high stress because you've got a lot of balls in the air and everything has to go perfectly because you've just spent a lot of money to hire this crane.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, my fingers are crossed for you. Good luck when that happens. Something tells me your clients are in good hands, so no need to worry.
I hope so. I really like to have things feel, you know, simple and fun for my clients. I think the art world can be a little daunting. So if I can make it feel like a fluid, easy process, I feel like I've done my job.
Nice. Yeah, that would be important. There is that that serious side to the world of art that really can be intimidating, can't it?
And also, you know, there is like this snobbiness. People don't know that they can just go into galleries anytime they want for free and see museum quality work. And I think we're so lucky living in New York or, you know, the other major cities in the US and Europe that, you know, we have access to this work that's about to be squirreled away into private collections. And this is your big opportunity to see it.
Yeah, I'd never really thought of that. That once it goes into a private collection, most people will never see that piece again.
Mm-hmm. And same with auction previews. Mm-hmm. Auction previews are a really great opportunity to see fantastic stuff that probably won't be on view to the public again, or at least not for a decade. And again, they're free. You can walk in, walk out.
Love free. It's good. Good stuff. So, Amy, talk to our listeners at home who might be considering upping their art game in their home. What would your message be to listeners today about collecting art on every level?
If budget is a concern, I tell people to buy the very best they can afford. So, if you have $10,000 to spend, I would not recommend getting a painting. I would recommend getting a photograph or a work on paper or something additioned. You can get a really good photograph for $10,000 and only a mediocre painting. I have a series on my website and social media called Tuesday Under 10, which every Tuesday I feature a work of art that I really love that's priced under $10,000, and they're often under $5,000. So, you know, this is art. It's still very expensive, but it's relatively affordable.
Right.
Another thing I would recommend is considering things you already own and love, you know, maybe a postcard that you got when you were traveling or a really cool looking matchbook or something like that, and getting it framed and including that in a gallery wall. You can create something really interesting and cool looking that's also personally meaningful to you. And along the same lines, I always recommend doing expensive framing, particularly with inexpensive artwork. The right framing can make something that you did not pay so much for look like $1 million.
Oh, interesting. A great way to approach that. So have you followed that advice when displaying art in your own home?
I have, yeah. I have one of my favorite things I have in my home is a black and white photography gallery wall in my living room. And I spent about 2 years collecting the work for it. And there are some really amazing pricey pieces in it. My favorite is a unique photograph by the photographer Lisa Oppenheim. But there's also some very inexpensive stuff in it as well. There's a picture of an eclipse by an unknown photographer from the 1960s. And it's a little beaten up and ragged around the edges. And I just adore it. It looks like this real historical object.
Wow. And what's the story behind that? Where did you find it?
I bought it at one of the best places to look at photography is the APAD Art Fair, which is in New York in April. And what's cool about it is that it has the complete history of photography in one room for about half a week. So there's stuff dating to the late 19th century and stuff that, you know, was just printed 2 days before. And there are some very high-end booths there, but there's also a few booths that are selling things that I would more describe as ephemera than fine art, things by vernacular photographers. So you may not know the name of the photography, but the photographer, but they can be really cool images. And with the right framing and the right things installed beside it, you can make incredible presentations in your home.
Wow. Nice. I like that. I'm jotting this down. Taking notes. Inspired.
I love helping people do gallery walls for their home. You have to have a little bit of patience to find the right things, but it's a really rewarding process and sort of, you know, going out into the world and, you know, finding, you know, bits and bobs that appeal to you and doing awesome framing and installing it perfectly is a really fun process.
Well, let me ask a practical art wall creation question. Sure. Get that long sentence out there. Do you gather everything first and then decide how to hang it? Or do you begin hanging things and then just build the collection and continue to acquire as you go? What is your recommendation?
If it's going over a couch or something really a very central location in your home, I would wait until you have everything you need. Okay. If it's going in a hallway or a bathroom, you know, somewhere that gets a little less attention visually, you can start in the middle and have it grow outward.
Okay. All right. So options both ways,
yeah,
right?
Depending on where it's going.
Nice. So what would our listeners be most surprised to find in your home, Amy?
Well, that matchbook I mentioned, I actually have this really neat matchbook from the 1950s.
Oh, wow.
With these little ladies in cool hats on it. And I have that framed and it hangs next to a pretty expensive photograph. So I love that juxtaposition between, you know, art and collectible, high and low, you know, that gives your home a real home feel. It's not a museum, wow. It's a house.
So you really practice what you preach, don't you?
I absolutely do.
I love that. That's great. So think about art heroes of yours. Maybe it's an artist. Maybe it's a gallery owner. Maybe it's someone who was just influential in the art world. If you had a chance, Amy, to spend an hour or so with one of these people, maybe living, maybe deceased, who would you pick? Who would be your most influential person that you'd want to spend time with?
I think if I had to pick one, I would pick Peggy Guggenheim. She was a really fabulous collector, mostly in the 1940s, and she built the Peggy Guggenheim Museum in Venice. And I'd love to hear about what drove her as a collector and what her process was like. But also, she was romantically linked to dozens of artists, and I'm sure she has amazing stories. I think that would be really neat.
Good pick. Very good pick. I like that. So what's the very best art collecting advice that you've ever come across, Amy?
I think, as I mentioned, buy the best that you can afford. Okay. Do expensive framing. Buy things you love. It's tempting to you know, get sucked into this idea of resale value. And I really do, you know, I often prepare market reports for my client and try to help them buy things with an eye to future value, but you know, unlike a stock, you should want to live with it on your wall in the meantime. And then when it comes to installing, think very carefully about how you're going to experience the work in the space. So for example, if it's a hallway and you're only going to be able to get 1 or 2 feet away from it, it doesn't really make sense to have something enormous because you're not going to be able to see the whole thing. So as you're installing, stand or sit where you would be taking the work in most of the time. If it's a wall in the living room, don't just stand there as the guy's holding it up. Also sit on the couch and make sure it looks good from the lower height.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. Definitely does. Is there an art trend or a trend in the art world that you're going to be really happy to see go by the wayside?
I'm not a huge fan of design retailers like CB2 or Restoration Hardware attempting to sell art. If you flip through the catalogs, they don't even have the names of the artists listed. And I think that art needs to tell a story. It's, you know, it's you get so much more out of it if you know who it was made by and how and why. It's, you know, owning art is a little bit different than owning a couch. It's somewhere in between a couch and maybe a family pet. You know, it's got a lot more personality and it's gonna give a lot more. So I think this idea that design retailers can fill that role is a little weird. And also, they're not that inexpensive, the things that they're showing. You can really get what I would call real art for the same price.
Okay. So Duly noted. Duly noted. We'll just leave it at that. How's that? If there were a fire at the house, Amy, we pray it never happens, but if there were, what's the one piece of art that you would grab on your way out?
That would be very hard because my wall babies are very precious to me, all of them. I have this very small photograph of feet that is by a photographer named Aaron Siskind, who's kind of a big deal. And this piece was not super expensive because it's so small. And it was his 1957 Christmas card. And so it says on the bottom, you know, Merry Christmas, Aaron Siskind, or Aaron. And there may be others like it out there somewhere in the world. But to me, it feels really irreplaceable. And it was also a wedding gift. So I think that would be the one.
Okay. Sounds like a good pick. Are you a book lover?
I am, yes.
Do you have a book, maybe an art book or a book on the world of art that you would recommend and sort of with the feeling that it should be on the bookshelf of collectors everywhere?
I think it's great if to own coffee table books about the people on your wall in general. I think it helps people who come to your home sort of very quickly with their eyes learn a little bit more. Mm. But as a specific book, there's a woman named Sarah Thornton who's written a bunch of books about the art world. But one of her first ones was called 7 Days in the Art World. And it's this really neat insider's view into sort of the annual art world calendar. So she takes you to an art fair and to an auction and to the Venice Biennale. And if you've never gone to all those things, it's a really great window into those experiences.
Wonderful. Sarah Thornton, 7 Days in the Art World. Not familiar with that one. Looks like I've got something to add to my library this weekend. Thank you for that recommendation. We'll post a link to that book in the show notes sections, Amy, so listeners who aren't familiar with it can quickly and easily add it to their library, and they'll thank you for the recommendation.
My pleasure.
Yes. That brings us down to the last question, Amy. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. We're going to paint a picture for you and then get your thoughts. Imagine that you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have, laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
Wow. I think that, as I've said, I would get one piece of art that I really loved rather than trying to get a bunch of things for $1,000. And I definitely have featured some things in my Tuesday Under 10 series that are about $1,000. One that's coming to mind is there's a young artist named Crystal Gregory, whose work I really love, and she has unique cyanotypes, which I think are about $800, which would leave me about $200 to figure out how to get it framed and installed. I think this might be one of those instances where I was wielding the hammer myself.
There you go. Do what we have to do, right?
Right.
Amy Snyder, great getting to chat with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, James.
We want to say a big thank you to our subscribers who are listening to the show today. We are very aware that none of this means anything without you. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing news about the show with your friends and helping us to grow. Go over to the website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can catch the notes from today's show. We'll post a link to Amy's website so you can follow all the great things that she's involved in the world of art. Be sure to follow her blog also. Some very interesting things there. While you are on our site, click a few more buttons. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful. Roomstyler, the leading design platform, has something new. Roomstyler Live. Now instantly see changes happen in a 3D photorealistic render while working in a 2D floor plan. View the results on any device instantly. Ready to learn more? Go to roomstyler.com/live or email sales@roomstyler.com.